RadioInfluence.com.
Before the show starts today, guys, I wanted to hop on in here and let you know, stick around for the second half of the show because we've got Akeem Alptekin who will be joining us for an interview. As you'll hear in a second, we got into a conversation. It took me about 10 minutes to remind everybody that this awesome interview is coming up at the end. So make sure you stick around for Akeem Alptekin, who had a Biden family member fly overseas to meet with him in the midst of the General Flynn shenanigans and his case that was going on. So it's a pretty stellar interview. Don't miss it. Onwards to the show. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Dave Al and
Beans. Today's Wednesday. Yep.
It's Wednesday. I can't believe it.
How much rain you got up there?
It was a nice little load. We had it was all day yesterday and into the evening and came down in sheets, and then sometimes it chilled out. Today we just have the wind left over, but hell, I would take yesterday, I would take that a few times a month. I love days like that. I worked so well, so efficiently. It's so cozy. As long as the lights stay on, I'm fine.
Yeah, you could tell my good friend Gigi how you feel about that because she got stuck at the airport overnight. So,
That sucks. Yeah, that sucks no matter what.
She didn't like that weather very much at all. She was stuck at the airport trying to get back to Florida. Her flight was late at night, like not late, like 9 or something like that. She's like, I don't think I'm going to be getting home tonight. And the next text I got was at 4:44 in the morning. I just got home.
Oh,
horrible.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
Yeah.
She walked through her front door at 4:49 in the morning.
She's like, if I don't wake up. Yeah, she'd just gotten home. She's like, I'm not going to be up early today. I'm home just now. So
that sucks.
Yeah. Horrible. But it was quite the storm up there. I saw some more flooding pictures and all that.
Yeah, not around all the sewers held up around us, so we were all right.
How's your grandma's house?
I think it's fine. I mean, I'll be there. I'm going to swing by there, see how everything is, and then Saturday we'll be there to carve some pumpkins. So yay. Yeah, it'll be nice. I had Judge Joe Brown on my show last night.
Heard, and I have not been able to watch it yet. How was that interview?
Oh, it was so good. And the great thing is that I think that we'll be able to get him back on. I try to get him on this show to talk about something, one topic or another, whatever the hell it is. But we ended up talking a lot about culture and raising children and masculinity and LGBT militancy and how it really doesn't represent what they say that they represent. It was awesome.
Crazy thing. I just got sent this article by said Gigi this morning. It is from The Verge. The title of it is Netflix scrambled internally to suppress a controversial movie from search results. The streaming giant kept cuties from appearing in some search results and recommendations after backlash.
Yeah, of course they don't take it off. Of course they don't. They don't think twice about putting money and time behind productions like this, pedophilic productions like this. They want to survive the backlash, and they hide it from search results.
Well, what they're doing is they're trying to compare it to. They're trying to say, and I'll read the sentence that tells me this in a second. They're trying to say that the right tried to cancel Netflix over cuties, but they are screaming about free speech when it comes to Dave Chappelle. And to which I say, you guys are idiots if you think that that's an equivalency. This was a pedo movie. This movie was pedophilia.
But you see, Tracy, and I hate to say it this way, there are no future LGBT leaders if not for grooming that takes place in productions like Cuties. I hate to say it. Because it's not indicative of how average gay men and women live their lives quietly, law abiding, all that stuff. But as far as this incorporation, this like I said, a militant political movement, the rainbow flag is a battle flag. This is all part of it. It really is.
Listen to this. The fallout was immediate. Hashtag cancel Netflix started trending on Twitter. QAnon conspiracy theorists claimed the company was distributing child porn and started tweeting about it with the hashtag Save the Children. A change.org petition calling for the film to be removed had more than 40,000 signatures. Texas House of Representative member Matt Schaefer asked Attorney General Ken Paxton to investigate the film for possible violations of child exploitation laws. The article goes on. But they're basically trying to say QAnon was the people behind QAnon were responsible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time I see this, I just, oh, goodness. So, yeah, Dave Chappelle did a thing. I don't know if you saw it, what he said.
Oh, I loved it.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
I have.
Where he set up his circumstances and demands for meeting. That they have to, if they're ever going to meet, that he was not invited to meet with any representatives of some kind of a transgender community.
You want me to play it?
Yeah, go ahead.
That way you don't have to worry about reciting it.
To the transgender community, I am more than willing to give you an audience. But you will not summon me. I am not bending to anybody's demands. And if you want to meet with me, I'd be more than willing to, but I have some conditions. First of all, you cannot come if you have not watched my special from beginning to end.
There's good reason for that.
Yep.
You must come to a place of my choosing and a time of my choosing. And thirdly, you must admit that Hannah Gadsby is not funny.
It's true.
I don't know who that is.
It's painful. She's some Australian lesbian comic that is just so terribly unfunny. I had to go and look into it last night, and I put it on my show when I did this in the opening. Because I asked Judge Joe Brown about Dave Chappelle, because you know he stood by Kwame Brown when Kwame Brown was taken on sports media earlier on this year, and I asked him, "What do you think of Dave Chappelle's handling of this latest confrontation with the powers that be?" And I had to play some Hannah Gadsby, and it's really, really just. Oh my gosh, it's so bad.
I want to see now. Hannah Gadsby.
No, hold on.
You have stuff?
Hold on. I can find the clip that I played last night. It was a 3-minute clip. I only can get through about a minute and a half.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it's just not funny. And it's, I mean, for anybody that's trying to go out there and make a point that women are funny, you this only just oh yeah, I don't know. I know. I can't. Oh, there you go. Check that out.
You sent it to me. In a
3 minutes. I only got through a minute and 5 seconds last night.
Okay. Here we go.
I should quit. I'm a disgrace. What sort of comedian can't even make the lesbians laugh? Every comedian ever. Oh, that's a good joke, isn't it? Classic. It's bulletproof too. Very clever because it's funny because it's true. The only people who don't think it's funny are us lezzers. But we've got to laugh because if we don't, proves the point. Checkmate. Very clever joke.
So apparently lesbians don't like jokes.
It's an oldie bit of goldie, a classic. It was written, you know, well before even women were funny. Back then, in the good old days, lesbian meant something different than it does now. Back then, a lesbian wasn't about sexuality. A lesbian was just any woman not laughing at a man.
It's just not. It's not funny. But listen, I was watching it, and the first thing I can come up with is, if I was going to improve her act for her, even though obviously there's a childlike a childlike audience for this. I mean, there's people who do consume this and think it is funny, and I feel bad for those idiots. But I think that she would do better if she had like a puppet or something. If she could bring like a, if she became, she did a little bit more like ventriloquism, or I don't know.
Wow, you're relegating her to ventriloquism now.
Well, not that ventriloquists aren't good. There aren't great ventriloquists out there. I'm just trying to find a way where she can. There's something she needs, something else to play off of. She needs a puppet, a sock puppet, something.
You know what stinks? We are like 12 minutes into the show, and I haven't mentioned yet that in the second half we have an amazing interview with Akeem Alptekin.
Oh, fantastic! Another one.
Screwed that up. I probably should have said that right away. But we'll call the show Akeem Alptekin, so this way people know before they get 10 minutes in. I didn't mean to change the subject. I'm just sitting here kicking myself like shit.
That's all right.
So something good happened, Frank, in the same vein, just while we're talking about comedians. And I've kind of given this guy a ton and ton, a ton, a ton of time over the past couple days. But he really made me laugh. I mean, he didn't make me like fall on the floor hysterical or anything. But I got a comment in my chat on Telegram that said, "Hey, Tracy, will you please watch my comedy? I know it's spam to ask here, but I figured it was worth a shot." And his website is mikeisfunny.com, which I shared. But you want to hear him? It's about 3 minutes and 45 seconds long. I think it's worth the listen. You want to hear?
Yeah, sure.
Let me know what you think about comedian Mike here. Comedian Mike, who's actually one of us. So I'm tilting this down. Here we go.
A video from China of people like falling over in the street and shit, and I was like, oh shit. Right? And then like a few weeks went by and I was like, are there people falling over in the street? And they were like, no, but a lot of 87-year-olds with pre-existing conditions have died. And I was like, oh well, I mean, that's normal, right? So we're good? Everything's... No, it's extra scary. Like, just a few years ago, that 86-year-old got sick and died, then people would just be like, oh, man. Well, that's a cruel world. Or whatever, you know? But now people are like, my perfectly healthy 86-year-old grandpa was murdered because you won't wear your fucking mask. Remember the good old days when 86-year-olds could just get sick? It didn't even matter. I don't know, man. They throw out numbers and shit that scare me, but then if you check them, then you're like, oh, well. They're like, 2,500 people died today. I'm like, oh, shit. How many people die on, like, a regular day? It's like, I don't know, probably like 5. It's like, no, it's like 8,000. I'm a woman, so technically it's better now. That sounds pretty good to me. There's nothing makes sense. The vaccine came out, and they were like, fuck yeah, you get this, you're immune. And then like 2 months later, they're like, we never said immune. We clearly said that hospitalization rates would be lower. That's what's fucked up, because like, people that get the vaccine, if you get coronavirus, then odds are you won't have very severe symptoms. And it's like, yeah, but if you're not vaccinated and you get coronavirus, then odds are you won't have very severe symptoms. So what the fuck is it doing? I don't know, man. I just needed a booster. That's what it was all along. But I saw it coming though, because on the vaccination cards they have spaces. You know they planned it ahead of time.
just like, let's just throw four spaces on there just for the hell of it, because you never know. I'm just like, fuck yeah, we're gonna sell this shit to people five times a year for the rest of their life and never catch a cold again. And if you do, then yeah, it's just a cold. All right, I'll move on. You just make it all political, you know? When Trump was in office, then Biden and Kamala were just like, I ain't fucking taking that shit. I don't trust that motherfucker. And then day one, they're in there, and they're like, no, it's good. That's how you know when something really works. When people are like, shut the fuck up and take it. You're really convincing me.
I loved that last part. That part to me was the funniest. I don't know why. He's not bad.
No, I like that. That's good. That's topical. It really is. And you know what? It's just, I don't know. We don't have to get into the sexist reasons why that he's funnier than Hannah Gadsby, but he is. And that is a wonderful observation there too. That I haven't heard anybody else even bring up about the vaccine, the cards.
The cards having space.
Blank space. Like, well, I wonder what these are for.
Yeah, they're just there. I mean, you know, we can't just have two.
You know what it probably is? It's just in case there was a typo. Like if they wrote something wrong, they had to cross it out. It's just a misspelling.
Yeah,
misplaced comma and a dotted J.
You really don't want to misplace a comma on one of these things. It nullifies everything, really. Right. Honestly. Right. But yeah, so MikeIsFunny.com. There's Mike. Mike, that's it. I'm done with you. Be gone.
That's it. That's great.
Unless, honestly, I really feel like, you know, like he's like, if you ever need a comedian, I'm like, I think we need a lot of comedians. Actually.
But I've seen Mike before.
You have?
Yes.
Where?
In fact, he sent me. I have not seen his stand up in person, but he has sent me. The voice was familiar. Then I went to MikeIsFunny.com. Said, oh yeah, Mike has sent me his stand up before, and I put it into my the rotation for the network and all that stuff.
Mike, you know what, Mike? I think honestly, like, you just need a little bit of a break. You need a little push into the more mainstream conservative kind of world. Here you go. You yeah. got it now. Mike is funny. He is. He made me laugh. I really needed it. And I need more comedy like that. I need like raw, sarcastic, obvious, like that's the kind of comedy I like. The way he did it.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, it, because you almost feel, it's like, it's very, first of all, it's not like you feel, it is objectively constructive comedy, because you are, you're engaging in something that is really getting to the crux of a major psychological war that we're in the middle of, and it just reminds you, okay, yes, no, I'm sane. I'm yeah. completely sane. We're seeing the same things. This is absurd. And let's laugh about it right now, even though it is really just, it's fucked up outside of this, you know, safe space. This is really messed up, but let's laugh now.
You know, it's funny too, because he has like a bunch of his other clips on Rumble and stuff, and he has them on his website, and he does a lot of COVID stuff because why not? I mean, that's been our lives for 18, 19, 20 months now, right? And it's all funny. All of the COVID stuff is funny. I've watched a lot of his stuff now because I was like, oh, let's see what else he's doing. You know, this was just more recent. But anyway, yeah. So, Mike, there you go. And now we're going to move into really horrible, shitty, important, sad stuff. So, you know.
Oh, we should have saved him for the end then.
Yeah, we should have. I'm just screwing things up left and right today.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm horrible. Horrible. Sorry. So what do you want to do first? Do you want to do... Not that. Do you want to do vaccine stuff first, or do you want to do January 6th stuff first? What would you like?
January 6th. Okay. Let's say January 6th. Let's talk about the attack on the Capitol, TM.
Did you trademark?
Because that's what I see. That's what I see in my head every time a journalist or an anchor or something makes reference to the attack on the Capitol. I always see TM at the end of it because it's just their creation.
Oh,
it's,
that's hysterical.
Every time I write it out now, I'm going to put the little TM.
So funny. So I have a clip here from Citizen Free Press, who has been very heavy on the Crips lately. The Clips, not the Crips, the gang, the Clips. And he's grilling Merrick Garland, who, this guy is useless. I mean, he's useless. I really wish that the Republicans would treat him the way the Democrats treated Bill Barr. Remember that hearing where he couldn't even say a word the entire time? Anyway, you know, we all know he turned out to be a loser, but when we thought he was great, here, let's listen to Gohmert ask him about FBI informants breaking windows at the Capitol. These guys know more than they're letting on. We'll just say that. And I think this whole thing's going to fall to the ground real soon. Judges are getting pissed off. Do you see what happened in the Kyle Rittenhouse case yesterday?
Yes. It was wonderful.
It's fantastic to see some sanity from the bench for once in this country. Fantastic. Like, he's looking at the prosecutor. So let me just tell it quick. There's a hearing going on, and the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse case is calling the people that Kyle Rittenhouse defended himself from arsonists, ludists, and murderers, right? Or was it rapists? I'm not sure which one. He was calling them what they are, basically. And the prosecutor was up there saying, I have not seen any video of any of these guys going around and, you know, hurting anybody else, pulling a weapon out, the people that are now not with us anymore and the people he attacked, was attacked by, Kyle Rittenhouse. And he's like, the best you're going to see out there is what, some arson, some loot, like it's nothing. And the judge goes, I can't believe what you're saying, what I'm hearing come out of your mouth right now. Like, he's beside himself that this prosecutor is so blasé about these crimes that these people were committing before what happened.
Yeah, it's too mad. They didn't have any of the a little bit of child molestation. What the hell is that?
Yeah,
he shot what, three people?
I believe so. Yes.
And two of them were child rapists.
Yeah.
It's like you throw a stone into those crowds, you're going to find murderers, child abusers, and arsonists. You throw one stone, you'll hit three child rapists in any of those crowds that were running around in the streets.
Yeah, and all of them were let go to go out and, you know, continue terrorizing the public. And
oh, yeah. Kamala Harris was a major, major fundraiser for all the bail for them, right?
Can you imagine if all the representatives on the right did the right thing and bailed these guys out of jail that are stuck in there for 1-6? Most of them haven't done a thing wrong.
They would never.
They would never do it. Never.
They don't have testicles.
Yeah, there's a surprising lack of cojones. Here we go. Here's Rep. Gohmert.
Six events been charged with insurrection.
Good point.
I don't believe so. Well, that is the word most used by Democrats here on Capitol Hill by January 6th, but no one has been charged with it that we could find either. How many protesters on January 6th were charged with obstructing an official proceeding for 4 to 6 hours? Do you know?
I don't know the exact number. Obviously, there are 650 who were arrested, some for assaulting officers, some for obstructing proceedings, some for conspiring to obstruct proceedings. I can get you the numbers for each of the specific.
Well, thank you. I'd be interested in getting that number. But regarding the men who broke the glass in the two doors there at the speaker's lobby when the two Capitol Police been standing there, moved to the side to allow them access, were any of those people who broke glass and did damage to those doors working for the FBI or other federal law enforcement entities?
And this is an ongoing criminal investigation.
The threat of domestic terrorism. Working for the FBI or other federal law enforcement entities.
And this is an ongoing criminal investigation, and I'm really not at liberty to discuss. There have been some filings in a nature of discovery, which has been provided to the defendants. But other than that, I can't discuss this now.
Well, we've seen some of those filings that talk about persons 1 through 20-something, were those persons, one, designated by number, were those people that were employed by the FBI or federal entities, or were they confidential informants?
Again, I don't know those specifics, but I do not believe that any of the people you're mentioning charged in the indictment were either one.
So he screwed up there. Gohmert doesn't challenge him on that. He's not talking about the people charged in the indictment. He's talking about the people who have not been charged in the indictment.
Yep. People who have allowed to just slink back and disappear into the background.
So Revolver, I haven't gotten to read it yet, which is why I'm not really commenting on it. But Revolver News did another piece on January 6th on Epps. Ray Epps is his name.
Yeah.
The guy that was there the night before talking about how everybody needs to go into the building and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Because he put on a most wanted list, removed, never arrested or anything. Let's keep going here.
Was a determination ever made as to who repeatedly struck Roseanne Boylan in the head with a rod before she died?
Again, I think this was a matter that was investigated by the U.S. Attorney's Office. And
well, there's a witness on video saying that it was a D.C. Metro policeman. I didn't know if you'd been able to confirm or deny that. Well, on June 22nd of 2016, Judge, most of the Democrat members of Congress took over the House floor, and for the first time in American history, members of Congress obstructed official proceedings, not for 4 to 6 hours, but for virtually 26 hours, not just violating over a dozen House rules, but actually committing the felony that some of the January 6th people are charged with. That was during the Obama administration. Nobody has been charged. And those kind of things where you let Democrat members of Congress off for the very thing that you're viciously going after people that were protesting on January 6th gives people the indication that there is a two-tiered justice system here in America. You know well, you've been a circuit court judge, you know well that confinement, pretrial confinement, is not ever to be used as punishment. Yet there are people, and understand, as a former tough law and order judge, I would sentence everyone, regardless of their party, who did violence or committed crimes on January 6th to appropriate sentences. But for heaven's sake, they are being abused in the D.C. jail. Have you done an inspection over there of the D.C. jail since your department has some jurisdiction?
So my understanding is Judge Lamberth, who I respect very much, has...
Yeah, he held the warden in contempt, but we haven't seen any improvement.
He asked for a review, and the Justice Department is conducting a review. The marshals did an inspection the other day, which was reported in the news, and the Civil Rights Division is examining the circumstances.
Yeah, sure they are. I have such faith.
A Bureau of Prisons, you understand.
Time of the gentleman has expired.
Can we get rid of that waddler? Why is he still there? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I thought that he had like horrible bowel issues.
Really?
Yeah, he should not be allowed. Somebody who craps their pants as much as Jerry Nadler does should not be allowed in Congress.
I mean, the president of the free world is also, or the illegitimate president of the free world is crapping himself left and right.
You're right. So. You're right.
I am right, aren't I? Isn't that sad?
My God.
It's
never
true.
Ends.
It's sad.
Oh, never ends.
Lord. So, let us move here to... Let us move to vaccines, because more and more yesterday, for example, the FDA decided 17-0 with one abstention to say, yep, it's OK. It's great. Let's give this vaccine to 5 to 6 to 15-year-olds now. And we've got a Frank. I mean, like anything else, you don't know how safe something is until people start taking it.
Right.
I mean, you know, any drug, you have to be able to have people take it to know if it's going to kill them. I mean, how else would you know, right?
Yeah, I know.
So we've got to wait for you. Yeah.
You have to. You have to. I mean, you have to just keep start giving people drugs just willy-nilly.
I mean, look, this is what the FDA said.
But we're never going to learn about how safe the vaccine is unless we start giving it. Yeah, that's just the way it goes.
I thought you were joking. I thought you were making a cheeky comment.
Oh, no, that was the FDA speaking.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know,
it's bad enough when Nancy Pelosi goes and uses that twisted logic to justify passing legislation mm-hmm. without having it be debated on. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about putting this into kindergartners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Do you want to hear it again? Yeah. Here.
But we're never going to learn about how safe the vaccine is unless we start giving it. Yeah, that's just the way it goes.
We're never going to learn how safe this vaccine is until we start giving it. That's just the way it goes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that brings it to a new level.
It's just the way it goes. You know, I mean, what's 100, 200, 500, 6,000 kids in the greater, you know, as we march towards the greater good, Frank? Really?
I can't even imagine the parents that are going to offer up their children as sacrifices to this is I feel so bad for the kids.
I was saying, like, you know, I think the majority of parents are going to draw a hard line at this now. And somebody said to me, I really wish you were right, Tracy. This is my friend that I grew up with. This is her son. And it was like a picture of her son with the sticker, I got my vaccine. And she goes, when he found out he was eligible, he ran right out to get it. No. You've brainwashed your baby. And now
Yeah, there's no 6-year-old that is going, oh, vaccine's available. Let's go, mom. Get in the car. Come on. Or ran right out. I'm going to walk over to the CVS, mom. I'll see you later. Need to get vaccinated. It just doesn't happen that way. And yeah, no, I'm with your friend in saying that I want to be as optimistic as you are, but I'm not optimistic. There's too many people. There's too many people that are lost.
There is
that they're willing to do this.
There is an article that was shared in the Dark to Light podcast room that was really, really, really good. It's by, I don't know what this person's credentials are, but I know that the article is factual based off of what I know to be true. I'll put the link in the show notes below. To review, we have now had, well, what the title is more on original antigenic sin and the folly of our universal vaccination campaign. And it says, to review, we've now had 10 months of mass vaccination against SARS-CoV-2. 7 billion doses nearly have been administered worldwide. This unprecedented campaign has not eradicated coronavirus. It hasn't even suppressed infections. Instead, case statistics have ballooned almost everywhere. While the vaccinated appear to enjoy some protection against severe outcomes, skyrocketing transmission means most countries have seen little benefit on balance from their universal vaccine campaigns. The more pressing question has become simply what's going on. He goes through details in here. It's a really, really, really good article that explains what original antigenic sin is. It's so complicated. Like, I know what it's so hard to explain it. This article does a great job. Just read the freaking article.
Okay. Well, fine.
Oh, what a waste of 20 minutes.
You just, there you go.
Well, I got to cut this out and save it for a blooper reel one day.
Yeah, well, like you said, it's one of the better things about not being live. Yeah. Because if you go through the whole rigmarole and you realize, oh, I shouldn't have done that. You have no clue what it's like for me, Tracy.
I've done night. Live before. I've done a lot of live before. But yeah,
I know. But I'm coming home. I'm driving home at night and I'm just in my head. I'm going through what happened, what went right, what I wanted to improve on. And then I just start, oh, man, so, I want to take that whole thing out. I should have saved that for today. I hate this.
Look, I get it. And there have been times where I've been demonstrating something live and it hasn't worked. That's the worst. Like, I went to show people the links in the PDF and for some reason the browser I was using just didn't work. And I'm like, well, you're supposed to be able to click on these and open up article.
Like, things go wrong all the time. Like, I accidentally left, like, a doc open with my name and password in it. You know, things like that. Yeah. But
this is supposed to be going my way right now, yeah. By the way.
So for those of you who might be confused right now, I just cut out probably about 10 minutes of me sheepishly and horribly trying to explain original antigenic sin to the audience completely unsuccessfully. That's what you missed.
That's what you missed.
So lots of editing. I think that's it for today, Frank, because we have this amazing interview with Akeem Apdekin, and I have to record a little bit of an intro of me saying, hey, by the way, guys, at the end of the show, don't miss it. We have Akeem Apdekin talking about Joe Biden and his brother flying overseas to meet with Akeem Apdekin in 2019.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
In the midst of the General Flynn shenanigans. Why?
They are multitaskers. They love to multitask.
Yeah. So you'll have to listen to the interview to find out why. And that's it.
That's it. Well, enjoy yourself, everybody. We'll see you on Friday.
We'll see you Friday. You have to say later. Thank you. Do it again. Do it again.
Later.
So I am joined again by now what I would consider a friend of the show, Akeem Apdekin, who we've followed his case throughout, and he's been here. I think this is your third time here, right, Akeem?
Yes, Tracy. Good to be back. Thank you.
Glad you're here, because I think that we really need to keep this at the forefront. It's kind of, with everything going on in the world, this kind of stuff tends to be forgotten about sometimes. But, with John Durham now supposedly ticking up on his work for the special, and his special counsel and the constant attack on everything good and right in the world, I figured through our good friend Adam, it would be smart to bring you on to talk about some pretty amazing stuff that's been going on. So just to bring people up to speed on your case real quick, you were indicted criminally in the Bijan Kian Flynn Intel Group ridiculousness. It was the FARA violations or alleged FARA violations that weren't FARA violations because there was no government involved at all. And you have basically been kind of hanging on, not coming to the United States, not addressing any of this in the States because you're worried about retribution and for them to throw you in jail. But Bijan Kian's case was tossed. The judge tossed it after a guilty verdict by a jury that was obviously biased. And, Judge Trenga, I believe it was, tossed the verdict out saying there's no way that the prosecution proved their case. It then went to appeal under the Biden Justice Department, or was it the Trump Justice Department that sent it to appeal? I think it was the Trump Justice Department, actually.
It was the Trump Justice Department, but the judges were, the majority of the judges were Democratic appointees.
Yeah, so that went to appeal. The judges who heard the appeal were completely biased, absolutely ridiculously, sent it back to Judge Trenga, basically ordering him to have another trial, if I'm not mistaken.
I wish that was true, because that's what Trenga ordered before he ruled. He said if his decision was overturned, he hereby ruled, that's how it was stated, that there would be a retrial. And that's also how appeals usually work, because the appeal court does not see the witnesses in person. So they're less of a feel for the case than the judge who originally oversaw the case itself. So they usually look if there was some sort of a judicial error. And if they think there was, they usually annul the decision that was made by the lower court, which automatically would result in a retrial. In this case, and we saw this a lot in the Flynn saga, in another very rare judicial decision,
yeah.
They actually ordered the judge to convict Bijan Kian.
Which is... I can't believe I screwed that up, because it's really unheard of. It's completely, and so now the
that's why you screwed it up, because you can't fathom that something like that happens.
I'm surprised every day now, and I'm getting used to it. But there's a lot more to this. So let's quickly talk about what happened in the ninth hour. The government came with some supposed evidence that was classified due to national security reasons. And tell everybody what that was.
Yeah, so on the eve of the trial, just before it started, the prosecution read out a one-sentence statement that was something along the lines of, that the United States is in the possession of multiple independent pieces of evidence of the Turkish government influencing U.S. policy through General Flynn, and that they also were in possession of multiple communications between me and General Flynn. And all of this was very classified, and they made it seem like there was something really, really fishy going on. And it was put in as a prosecution evidence, I think DX, it's called 66. But clearly, because it was classified, nobody knew what it was. And Bijan's lawyers were perplexed. We were still in a joint defense agreement with his lawyers. But what they were trying to do at that point is driving a wedge. Is that the right way to say it? A wedge between us? And it worked, because at that point, Bijan's lawyers thought, wait a minute, maybe there was a lot more to this case, which would explain this ridiculous case. And it's just that our client doesn't know about it, because they made it very clear in that statement that Bijan Kian was not privy to those communications. So his lawyers understandably said, then why are we still on trial? Let's dismiss this case. If it's not about our client, then why is he still standing trial? You know, that question was never answered. But Judge Strenga, in his wisdom, said, let's keep this on ice for now, and we'll revisit this when I think it's relevant again.
What was the date of that happened? Do you know?
I think it was the day that the trial started. So I don't recall exactly what must be 2019. Yeah, must be 2019, probably March, if I'm not mistaken.
So around March of 2019, that they come out with this in, you know, and then that was in the middle of all the other nonsense that was going on in the case of General Flynn as well. So, okay.
Yes. So mainstream media, of course, takes this and blows this out of proportion, you know, because it looks very sexy. There was, you know, top secret evidence that, you know, something was going on. Nobody involved knew what it was. So we really very much all wanted it to be declassified, because I know for a fact that there no such thing exists, that there are no independent communications between me and General Flynn. Especially nothing that would make us look murky. It's quite the opposite. It would probably be exculpatory. So I think the government bluffed. And now with Bijan asking for declassification and Judge Trenga weighing it, they're in trouble. Now they're probably considering what to make up.
So now this is before sentencing for Bijan, right? He's saying
yes,
to the
judge.
Yes,
it's on the eve of the trial, before the trial started, just before.
No, so
but,
now...
But it influenced the jury, of course. Imagine you're sitting there as a doctor or a housewife or someone who's not privy to national security information in his career, and you hear a statement like that coming from the U.S. government. It's a very big statement. You think, wow, there's a lot here and that we don't know. And It was a successful effort to influence the jury, and we saw that it worked, because the jury came out with a guilty verdict in a situation where a very reputable and experienced judge said no rational jury could have reached that verdict.
So now we're back around now with the case. Isn't this rearing its head again now?
Yes, exactly, because as you will recall, Judge Strenga said he will revisit it, and when the district court, the higher court, ruled that he should convict Bijan Kian. Bijan's lawyers came out with this, reminded the judge of this motion. So now there's a back and forth between Bijan's lawyers and the government, with the government being extremely aggressive and not wanting to declassify. And I see no other reason for that. As someone who is in the middle of all this, my name is in that sentence, so I should know what it's about. And I can tell you, I could swear on everything that's holy to me that no such thing exists. So I know for a fact that they were exaggerating, they were bluffing. Any communications that they have with me involved in it, I hereby ask them to declassify it. They have my permission to do so. It would be exculpatory. I'm sure of it. So, you know, nothing we ever said or did came close to anything that they accuse us of.
So now you've got the government who used this cudgel to basically sway a jury and all kinds of other nefarious things.
They influenced public opinion.
Right, yeah. Right. I mean, in a big way. And now they won't. Now the judge is left trying to decide what he's going to do. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he kind of put this to the side again. Like, he almost doesn't want to push the envelope. Now, if I were him personally, after being kind of scolded by an appellate three-judge panel, I would say, you know what? Screw you people. Let's get it out all on the table. You've already made me look like an idiot once now by saying this to me and ordering me to do something that I didn't want to do in the first place. Let's see what the hell this is all about. Because technically, if the government did have those communications that you and General Flynn supposedly had, it could completely exonerate Bijan Kian of any wrongdoing, as per them.
Exactly. So just because of due process and rule of law principles, but as well as the public's right to know at this point, and also for my future. I mean, I'm still innocent because I'm not proven guilty, and I want this to be declassified. So they have absolutely no good reason to keep this classified. And I'm pretty certain that if this so-called classified evidence would prove their case, it would long be declassified already.
Yeah, they'd be traipsing that out all over. CNN would have it. WAPO.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're very good at leaking stuff. Why isn't this leaked?
Because it doesn't exist.
Because there's nothing there.
Exactly.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah. All right. So in the midst of all that, so there are still, like, I just want people to understand this whole Spygate saga, all of this nonsense we've been dealing with, while it has shrunk to the background for a lot of people, there's still crap going on every single day that, you know, is like holdover from back then. But I learned something absolutely stunning from you, and I'm going to let you talk about it. And I'm just going to ask a couple questions because I don't even know the full story yet. But somebody came to visit, which blows my mind, and I think it's going to blow the audience's mind too. Explain what happened.
No, the thing is, I never volunteered this information, but a Turkish journalist, a very well-known journalist, in a live interview asked me this question. And I didn't want to lie, so I confirmed it. Jim Biden, Joe Biden's brother, visited me with his wife a couple of days before Joe Biden announced his candidacy in Turkey. And I mean, they were very pleasant people, very nice people. I'm not sure if you would consider that a mistake on their end, but I do know for a fact if it was Trump, if their last name had been Trump, it would have been a huge issue. And I made a point of keeping this a secret because I didn't want to be accused of trying to influence the U.S. elections in 2020. And it never came out before the elections. But now that it is out and the White House press secretary has been asked a question about it. And again, nobody reported it. I'm just wondering, how on earth is it possible that mainstream media does not ask a single question about it, whereas they made a huge issue of me hiring a couple of rooms in the Trump hotel, and I signed that contract before Trump was even a candidate.
So they were basically trying to make a false equivalency between you getting a couple rooms in one of Trump's many properties all across the world before you even knew that he was close to running for president. And then they ignore the fact that the man who was about to be announced, who was in the administration prior,
he was the vice president. I
mean, yeah. His brother, who's also involved in all kinds of other stuff that Biden does. I mean, if you follow U.S. news, you hear about all the stuff with China, the deals, the Burisma stuff. Like, he's not a stranger to any of that stuff. He's very much involved. He comes to visit you after Biden was the one responsible for bringing up the Logan Act in response to General Flynn. Why did he want to come and sit with you? And then also, please, because the first thing I thought was, why wouldn't he have told us this? This is kind of important. So tell us why you didn't say anything. And then how come he wanted to come and talk to you?
I mean, I didn't say anything out of my own because of my own principles. I didn't want to, in any way say something that could be misperceived in the media and could have been blown out of proportion, maybe. But clearly, when the last name is Biden, that's not a risk. I found out. But that was my concern. What happened is that my lawyer asked me they wanted people close to Joe Biden wanted to meet with me. And I said, well, if it's a lawyer or someone like that, because at that point I was already on the indictment, I was very hesitant to talk to anyone. And I said, if it was first degree family, I would be willing to talk to them. So after a while, they said his brother, Jim Biden, and his wife would like to visit Turkey. They'd like to get an invitation that would justify their visit from someone else than me, ideally from a proper organization, which we did. And they came to visit me. And, you know, they were very understanding of my situation. They were very nice. And, you know, in my perception of things, they didn't do anything wrong, not necessarily. But, you know, they did recommend that I hire Eric Holder, and they believed this case was ridiculous and probably go away if I did.
So, i.e. hire Eric Holder from Covington and Burling, the same firm that represented General Flynn that he got rid of and trashed in the middle of his case. Yeah. Was this before or after he got rid of them?
This is probably a little bit before, I'm guessing now.
So wouldn't that represent like a massive conflict? What, if you did that, wouldn't that have thrown everything into just a huge absolute tizzy?
Probably, yeah. I mean, at that point, I was hesitant to tell them, but, you know, Eric Holder would be the last person to trust for me at that point, yes.
Insane, insane. So he flies all the way over there to, and I mean, the first question I have, you don't have to answer this, I don't know if you even know, who paid for his trip?
Well, they paid for the tickets themselves. They flew over. You know, in line with Turkish customs, I paid for their hotel because they were my guests.
Well, that was kind of you, Akeem. That was so kind of you. I can't, like, I'm just trying to figure out what it is exactly Jim Biden would have to gain from coming all the way to Turkey just to meet with you 2 days before his brother announces he's going to be running for president in the midst of declassifications and, you know, us learning more about Biden's role in this entire saga, specifically having to do with General Flynn. It's crazy to me that this happened, and you obviously didn't play ball with whatever it is they were asking. And here we still are today with you kind of hanging out in the wind and suffering because of all of this. And I think that speaks to your character, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very hesitant to talk about this. I can see them at home and watching this and thinking, oh my God, the guy's talking about this, probably not being happy. I have nothing against them, but it's just my point is, you know, I hired a retired three-star general, when he was not in office, when his family members were not in office. I entered into a legal contract, commercial contract with him, a contract that was consumed properly. And there's nothing illegal about the contract. And here I am, not able to travel. My career is ruined. My reputation is devastated. Financially, we're almost in ruin. Legal bills still piling up. And the United States government wants to throw me in jail for 35 years. So what I have difficulty with is, why is it okay for me to host these people? And nobody says a single word about it in the media. But it was not okay for me to hire General Flynn. I mean, what's the standard here? I don't even want to call it a double standard. It's more than that. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It is. And we briefly spoke before the interview about how horrible it is here. And it's been kind of this slow road that's now become a very quick road. But just to recap, because Adam has done some really amazing work over at the Washington Pundit, where he's talked about, like, you used to work for a Democrat congressman, I believe, correct?
Yes, Congressman Tom Lantos.
Yeah. So you
He's
got
a real statesman, someone I very much respect. God rest his soul.
Well, that's fantastic, because we don't hear a lot about that anymore from people.
Yeah. Like,
so you worked there, and you actually, you know, had communicated with Joe Biden in various, you know, capacities, walking to the Capitol, or like, so it wasn't like you were a stranger to him.
No, exactly. I mean, I clearly for me, meeting him was a highlight of my time there. And I'm guessing it wasn't for him. I was just a very junior staffer of his counterpart because Joe Biden was a ranking member in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and his counterpart on the House side was my congressman, Tom Lantos. So that's the capacity in which I saw him. And I knew him. I liked him. I respected him. Of course, now politically, things are very different. I represent a different political viewpoint than he does. But yes, I knew him. Yeah.
So it's just the whole thing. So now what? Now what? Like, what? What next? Like, what are you waiting on now? Are you waiting to see what happens with Bijan's case? Like, what are they going to do? How do you even move on? Is there ever closure for this?
I mean, originally, I wanted to go to the United States, represent myself to the court, clear my name. My lawyers heavily advised against it, not because they're crazy conspiracy theorists. And all of my lawyers have been either retired prosecutors or senior government officials, and most of them Democrats. But they believe this is a very politicized case. And I wouldn't get a free trial in the United States. So under these circumstances, things are tough as it is. I have three little kids, and I'm hesitant to go to the United States, which for me could mean that this case will hang over me as a dark cloud for the rest of my life, rendering me unable to travel. For someone like me who has had my background, a very international background, and I always made my money by traveling and doing international trade, this is devastating. But, I mean, risking 35 years in prison, it's just too big of a risk to take at this point.
I don't even know what to say. Like, what's next? What's next? I want to...
You know what's next? I really hope that people listening to this, at some point, someone who is... better than me at making his views heard will look into this case and say, it's, you know, what's going on here? It's ridiculous. And I hope that career professionals at the Justice Department will at some point say, stop, this is, you know, not, this is not okay. And I hope Durham will do his job. And I hope there will be good people, decent Americans, patriots who will come out as whistleblowers or otherwise, and explain to the American public what happened here.
I wish that I maybe a year ago or so, if not more, I would have been very confident that that would happen. I don't, there are people out there still who are definitely following this Durham special counsel. And I can't say I'm not following it. I absolutely am. But I have like literally zero. I've seen so much absolute abject law breaking go on with zero accountability that I have a hard time believing that these powerful people who committed such atrocities, and for people like you who, you know, got swept up into this completely unknowingly, like you didn't do anything wrong, and here you are in the middle of this international drama, you know, it's terrible.
They kept pushing my name in all sorts of articles with people that I've never met, never seen, never heard of. You know, with these Russian oligarchs, this, you know, very dark and murky people, they put my picture into graphs with them, etc. I mean, and then imagine a jury, after seeing 3 years of this, these news reports, is expected to give an honest ruling about us. I mean, we were already convicted in the court of public opinion by mainstream media. So we have no chance of getting a fair trial, but I do believe, I'm still hopeful. There's a Dutch saying that says honesty lasts longest.
Yeah.
And that I'm still following that advice, at least for now. But I think the truth has a way of coming out, Tracy. And I still believe that at some point, decent people will realize what they've been part of. And that it's not some, you know, political game, but that actual lives have been ruined.
Yeah, lives, you know, countless lives have been.
Countless lives.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yours and your families and your wife and your kids and your livelihood. It's just terrible. And I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, what would have happened if you would have hired Eric Holder in 2019? I wonder what would have happened. Maybe you would have sailed off into the sunset, but why were they pushing?
Yeah, most likely.
I know. Why were they pushing Eric Holder?
You know, I had a lawyer, and I keep forgetting his name, probably because I really don't want to think of him ever again in my life. But it's a lawyer that volunteered. He called me before I was indicted. He knew a lawyer that had written my FARA legal opinion, which actually stated that the Flynn Intel Group did not need to file FARA. But he called me, and he basically volunteered as my lawyer. He said, I believe you might be indicted unless you go in and talk to the Mueller team now. He took me to the Eastern District of Virginia with this prosecutor, Brandon von Greck, and the FBI people involved. I told them everything that happened, truthfully. But it amounted that, you know, that little good deed of mine amounted to four different counts of lying. So they said that I lied, and the lies they say is that basically I say I'm not an agent of the Turkish government.
You're not.
I was not directed and controlled by them. The government did not pay for the contract, so this is all true. But they added four counts and 5 years for each count, which means an additional 20 years. And I later found out that this lawyer, and I'll come up with his name any minute, he actually was a former colleague of Brendan von Gregg. You would think that's something to mention to me. And in the CIA leaks case, he had worked, he had represented the CIA. And you would think that this is relevant information to tell me, considering the CIA doesn't like General Flynn a lot.
They're so dirty. These people are seriously, like, how do you do that? They're everywhere. They're trying to entrap people. They're trying to manipulate people. And there are very few people on this planet that will stand with integrity through that. You, General Flynn, did it. And, you know, look, there's reward at the end of all this, because you can sleep every night. You don't have to worry. These people, can you imagine being one of these scumbags?
I'm not sure if they're worried about the afterlife like I am, but yes, in that sense, I do sleep well. His name was Peter Zeidelberg, by the way. And it really amazed me what happened there. And that's why I'm, I was very hesitant to hire Eric Holder, because at the point that I decided not to continue with Peter Zeidelberg is, and in case he's listening and wants to deny it, I have a witness of that phone call. So if he wants to deny it, he can. But he started screaming to me that I should say certain things that the prosecution would want me to say. And at some point I went crazy. I said, are you asking me to lie?
That's exactly what General Flynn said.
Yeah. And then he screamed to me. He was literally screaming. And he said, and I think he said, God damn it. Or damn it, something like that. He said, this is not some Hollywood movie where the good guys win. This is the United States government asking you to do this.
Wow.
And I thought, like, wait a minute. This doesn't sound like my lawyer here.
Wow.
And it's God's honest truth, and I can find the date, and I'm sure that the NSA must have a recording of that call somewhere. So if anyone denies it, I'll find a record of it. So I'm warning them not to. I mean, this is exactly what happened. And I have an American witness to this phone call. I made sure of that because I was already, things were already looking fishy to me. So I was at that point already not trusting my own lawyer.
I'm going to dig a little more. And I'm going to talk to a couple people that I know have encyclopedia brains on this stuff and see what we can't come up with, because the timing of that visit is no coincidence, my friend. Are you going to, can you keep us posted? Like, I'll have you on again and again. I don't care. I'll have you on every time you've got something that you want to talk about. Where do people support you in your defense fund?
There's a website called Justice for Akeem, with the four being a number four. I'm always, it's not very much in Turkish culture to ask for financial help, to be honest.
I know, and I force you to do it every time. I know.
At this point, I've thrown out that part of my culture, so I do need the help very much. Yeah.
You're not too proud anymore. You just do it.
I'm not too proud anymore.
Yeah. So just help him out. Justice for Akeem, EKIM.com.
Yes.
And dude, this is ongoing. If you're still one of those buffs out there that are following the Spygate case, get to work. You've got a timeline to figure out. And thank you for spending some time. Anything else you want to talk about before we go?
No, just best of luck, Tracy. You're doing great work.
Thanks.
And things must not be very easy for you, I can imagine.
No, but that's okay. We soldier on, okay?
Stay the course, yes.
Thank you.
This is an MMA report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I think you're probably going to be in agreement with me.
The fight that interests me the most is a co-main event of Jan Sandhagen.
Yeah, man, but I agree with you. I mean, it's a phenomenal fight, but there's one other fight that really interests me a lot. The main event does, but the other one that's competing for it is that Chimaev fight. And it has everything to do with the fact of what kind of Khamzat Chimaev is going to step in that cage. But obviously, Jan Sandhagen is the best fighter of the fight card, right? Like Peter Yan is someone who is a legitimate interim bantamweight champion, even though obviously that title won't be on the line and it doesn't exist. But, you know, Jan Sandhagen is just a phenomenal fight.
The MMA Report with Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.